Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, Episode 236, Kevin Lucia and Ronald Malfi. Today's episode is sponsored by Whispers from the Abyss, an H.P. Lovecraft-themed anthology from 01 Publishing.
It's basically about the business of writing, and they tell you the stuff they wish that someone had told them when they got started as writers.
You know, somebody can be a successful marketer and not necessarily provide a quality product.
I'm going to let Moses go because he's frothing at the mouth to talk about this one.
I like writing. I like reading. I like to immerse myself in books. That seems like a pretty good career choice.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Oh, you sound terrible. What happened? I'm just kidding. Oh,
man.
And now, podstructed on a zeppelin by an apprentice mage and delivered by a rocket ship to a benevolent dragon, Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing. I'm your host, Timothy C. Ward. We are in the middle of the Coffin Hop Horror Web Tour. It's been a lot of fun. We've got a few posts up. My top three villains, a take on dystopian horror, some examples from that, which is an interesting discussion because I guess some other people found some other ideas, but I was having a hard time coming up with dystopian horror. It seems like dystopian is mainly sci-fi or fantasy. But an interesting discussion. And as part of the fun of our Coffin Hop web tour here, every book that I mentioned from the beginning of the tour through October 31st goes into a giveaway where two winners get to choose one book of all the books that we mentioned. As we talk to Ronald Malfi, we're going to have a lot more awesome books into this pile, so I'm excited for that. We have our SF book release this week post for Tuesday, so those books will also be included in the giveaway. This will be the first of two parts with Ronald Malfi and Kevin Lucia. Ran about an hour and 10 minutes, so that was too much for one episode. There is so much good advice here. Kevin Lucia is a friend, horror writer friend. He's on Tales to Terrify with his Horror 101 segments, and so I brought him on to help me interview Ronald Malfi, who is one of our favorite horror authors. Even if you're not a horror fan, there is great advice from Ron. I like to make quotes from my guests and post them in the show notes. Sometimes, like with Scott Lynch, I was able to fit a quote onto his book cover and share that on Facebook, hoping that other people would share that. That would be more interesting than just sharing a link. But Ron has more than one quote, very helpful. So I'm very excited to share this with you guys. Another thing I wanted to mention is I am taking Introduction to Writing Science Fiction and Fantasy, an online course by Michael A. Stackpole. You may know of him from Dragon Page Cover to Cover, The Secrets podcast. He essentially is the reason why I write every day and have for about 5 years. Just a very inspirational writing instructor. He's published 45 books, 8 of them on the New York Times bestsellers list. This class is still open to enrollment. It started on the 21st, but it goes through, I think, December 16th. There's plenty of time to catch up. It's already helping me. I decided that as my novel's with the editor and I'm starting a new book, I really wanted to take advantage of having Michael's feedback going through his 21 Days to a Novel book. It's one thing to buy a writing book, and it's a totally other to buy it as part of a course where the teacher's there to help you. There's other students doing the same thing. So if that's appealing to you, I would go check it out. I will post a link in the show notes for that. Sorry to say, Kevin Lucia's book, Things Slip Through, is not going to be out until the middle of November. But you can go to Goodreads and add that to your list. We'll try and have something closer to that date to help promote him. He did a great job co-hosting, and we want to promote his first book. Forgive the editing in the beginning of this show. We started recording just kind of chit-chatting, and there were some things I wanted to include, so it's a little choppy at first, but then it smooths out. No need for me to intrude on the interview. All right, without further ado, enjoy this interview with Kevin Lucia and Ronald Malfi. Now to our fancy editing routine and my poor hosting skills. Kevin Lucia, why don't you tell us about your book, Things Slip Through?
My first short story collection will be coming out in November. It's a short story collection. They're linked together with like a framing narrative, so it's kind of like a novel in stories as well.
Now, Ron, why don't you tell us what you think about the book, Things Slip Through? Is it any good?
Hey, Kevin, I saw that you got my email about your book. I really did enjoy it, man. It was a good read, and I get a lot of a lot of books from people to blurb and to read and stuff, and that was more times than not, they're sort of a chore to get through. But I really enjoyed your book, and I wish you the best of luck with that too, man.
Thanks,
it's going to be really good.
That means the world to me. Thank you very much. I was kind of floating all day after reading that, so thank you very much.
Well, yeah, no, I enjoyed it. For a long time, I would always think about, you know, there's a lot of people who are trying to break into writing and doing some stuff, and you've read snippets of what they've done, and I always thought, like, at the top of my list was you, as far as, you know, who I'd like to see actually come out with a book where you could say, look, here's what they're doing, and so I'm glad to see it come out, man, and I wish you the best with it.
Thank you very much, sir.
Well, you got it, pal.
Kevin, who's this Ron guy anyway?
And Ron, and I may be making an assumption, but Ron is a very much a free agent. You know what I mean? He does what he wants to do, and he is who he is. And he writes what he wants to write, charitable and friendly to everyone. You know, and I've never seen him play a lot of the BS political games that I've seen. A lot of writers not nearly as good as he is, you know what I mean, play, you know, and he's, and for me as a young guy who's trying to make his mark, and yeah, I want a, you know, a publishing deal, and it's a fact of the business that, you know, it's not, a lot of times it's not what you know, it's who you know. I mean, that's just the way it is. But being able to navigate those waters and still be yourself, you know, and still be true to what you want to write and stuff like that. And he's always, you know, kind of, you know, just watching his career. And also too, I mean, he's, you know, people tell you, I'm sure they probably told you, you know, you start writing, people go give you all these rules. Don't do this. Don't do that. You're not supposed to do this, but not supposed to do that. You know, don't self-publish your first novel. You know, I believe Ron's very first novel, and I haven't read it yet, but I think it's called The Spaces Between, you know, he self-published it, you know, and he's come from there all the way to, I mean, several of his titles have been published internationally. They're published over in Germany and I think Poland. I'm not sure. Maybe that's someone else. But, you know, so he's done all that. And at the same time, he's been very content to, you know, he writes for Medallion. You know, they're the ones that do Floating Staircase, Medallion Press. You know, he's written for Leisure. He's written for Samhain. You know, he hasn't tried to make the big stab at New York and things like that. And he's got an agent. He's selling overseas rights. You know, and he's all done it by being true to his writing. You know what I mean? So he's not a sellout or anything like that. And that's one of the things that I really, you know, really appreciate about Ron.
And now to my poor introduction where I mispronounce Kevin's last name. Many learning experiences in this episode, but appreciate Kevin and Ron for doing a great job on their part. Enjoy the show, folks. Okay, so let's introduce our guests for today. First, I want to introduce Kevin Lucia. Wanted to have him on. Say hello, Kevin.
Hello.
Our main guest for tonight is Ronald Malfi. He is author of 16 horror novels. Is that correct? I counted on your website.
Yeah, if you count the novellas, yeah. I think okay. I had 11 novels and five novellas. So, yeah, that's about right.
I just finished Floating Staircase and am very impressed. He reminded me how much I love ghost stories and stories about writers and stories about moving into a new house. So he took all those genre tropes and made a really good story. Welcome to the show, Ron.
Well, thanks for having me out. I appreciate it.
Since I finished Floating Staircase, I have signed on to the newsletter for your publisher, Medallion. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I didn't realize I had a newsletter, but okay.
Yeah, it was at the end of the book. And so anyway, I signed up because I didn't realize that you had a book that came out in June called Cradle Lake. I thought it would be fun if you could introduce us to that story.
Yeah, Cradle Lake, actually, it's probably a pretty good segue because Cradle Lake started sort of as an unanchored subplot to Floating Staircase. The original draft of Floating Staircase also had a lot of the elements of Cradle Lake in it. And when I started paring down the manuscript for Floating Staircase, the themes just weren't jiving, and I realized the book was trying to be too ambitious. So I wound up excising a lot of pages from Floating Staircase and kind of set them aside. And but I, you know, just like any writer, I mean, you write this stuff and it sits there, and you know, it could be weeks, months, years later, you go back and you look at this stuff and you're like, you know, there's something there, and maybe not now, maybe now's not the time to address it, but someday, you know. So Floating Staircase, I took all that subplot out. I that book came out, and in the interim, you know, my wife and I, we had our first child, and that's really when I started to revisit Cradle Lake, and I realized that a big portion of what Cradle Lake was about not so much, to simplify it, I mean, you could say it's about parenthood and about the responsibilities that come along with that, but I think the overarching theme there is more about stewardship and responsibility, and that really started to take form with me after my wife was pregnant, and you know, and as a, you know, this was our first kid, and you start thinking inevitably about all the, you know, the horrible things that could happen, or you know, that's just where my mind goes, and I just started thinking about that and about what it meant to be a parent and what your responsibilities are there, and then how that would affect the relationship that you've had with your spouse all this time, and how different that's automatically going to become once this new person comes into your life. And that's really what reignited my passion for those chapters that I took out of Floating Staircase, and it took on its own life, and it became Cradle Lake. And it, you know, at first I was kind of concerned that because it sort of came from Floating Staircase, that the books themselves were too similar. And at first I tried to sit and think about how I could, you know, make them more different than each other. But then I thought, well, you know what, instead of trying to make them more different, let's embrace that, you know? And I figured they would be good companion stories for each other. And that's kind of what I refer to as my unofficial sort of lake novel, you know, lake novel duo, you know, about both books are about a lake. Both books take place with when a couple moves into a new house. And one of the chapters in both Cradle Lake and Floating Staircase, I have the main characters during a period of illness in their life when they're suffering through a fever. Both characters sort of have a fever dream of each other, and they kind of, it complements each story, as opposed to trying to pretend like they're not related. I figured, let me go the opposite direction and just say, hey, you know, I'm nodding my head and I get it, and I'm gonna acknowledge that both books are sort of connected in this way. So that's where it came out of, and those are the themes that were important in expressing and writing it. But they kind of came from the same wellspring when both books were written.
When I started reading Floating Staircase, the first chapter, I was almost all the way through before I realized that it was actually the first chapter and not like a bio introduction. because
right.
it seemed like this could be you, this writer who has issues, you know, with his, I can't really remember the issues at hand, but it just seemed very close to probably who you were in this character. And that kind of makes me think about what you said about how instead of trying to separate these two novels, you embraced their similarities. I'm curious how you approach that when you write characters and their stories. it doesn't seem like you're trying to separate yourself from the characters as much. What's your approach?
There's a little bit of me that bleeds into every aspect of something I write, whether it's the main character, whether it's, you know, periphery characters, or, you know, there's a little bit that leaks in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not the first person to say that about the opening of Floating Staircase. And to be honest, out of all the stuff I've heard about my work, I find that to be the most complimentary, only because I think first and foremost, a writer's job is to make themselves as a writer seem invisible. I mean, you should be able to pick up that book and read it, and just like you're walking into someone's life. So to hear that, that was really, I won't go as far as to say it was my intention, but that is certainly, when I take a step back and look at it and see that first chapter, I'm like, yeah, you know, I could see where people come away thinking this is me talking to the audience, and this is where this book is leading, which, that whole metafiction theme carries through that entire novel. So that sort of helps with it, particularly when you get to the end of the book. And there's that really, that metafiction, a part of it becomes, you know, strongest. These aren't really deliberate tactics that I take when I sit down and write something. It's just, this is the story I wanted to tell. Here's the characters who I feel most comfortably populate that arena. And inevitably, they're going to reflect a bit of yourself or a bit of people that you know. And that's, like I said, that's not just the main characters. That's for anybody in a book. I mean, you take your experiences and you kind of tie them all up into this neat little package, and you know, it's all based on stuff that you know. But thank you very much. I appreciate that. Like I said, I find that to be the most complimentary when somebody can pick that up and say, you know, I read the beginning chapter of this book and I wasn't sure what I was reading, if it was the author talking to me straight out or if this was the actual beginning of the book. And I, you know, that's the kind of stuff I love to read personally. And if I feel like I've achieved that with my own work, then it makes it seem all worthwhile.
That actually inspired me to start a new story, one that had a character that was close enough to me that I could sort of present a story in that way. So even more than just enjoying it as a reader, I enjoyed it as a writer too.
Oh, well, that, you know, and that kind of goes hand in hand with, you know, there's this whole school of thought where people say, you know, write what you know, but then you'll have the other people, the detractors, saying, well, you don't know anything about horror or ghosts or aliens or whatever, so how can you write about that? But I don't really think that's what it means. I think when people say, write what you know, they're saying, hey, write within the confines of what you believe life to be. I think there's a real honesty in that. And that's really, I feel, out of all my books, probably Floating Staircase has achieved that to the greatest. I think that's probably the most honest book that I've ever written. And, you know, when I wrote Cradle Lake as sort of an unofficial follow-up to that, I tried to project that same semblance of honesty into that story, although I feel Cradle Lake is a much darker book. But I always strive for that. It's the honesty in the characters that bring out the truth in the story that you're trying to tell.
One of the things I've always appreciated about your work, Ron, is that several of your novels have taken, you know, some of the classic horror motifs, but you've made them your own. You know, The Fall of Never was your gothic novel, and then Snow had an interesting form of zombie in it. And of course, we got the ghost and the Floating Staircase, and The Narrows had a really, you know, neat, you know, vampiric character in there. And these are all the classic tropes, but you weren't content to just rest on what they were. You just kind of made them, you know, your own. And is that something that, you know, that's your intention, or just, again, part of that whole, I'm writing this story, and it's going to be a Ron Malfi story, and it's going to have, like, you know, my signature touch on it?
I would say all of those, with the exception of maybe The Narrows, was not deliberate. When I wrote Snow and I started seeing the reviews coming in for that, it really took the wind out of me to see some of the people in it as a zombie novel. I'm like, how are they getting this? And then, you know, when you take a step back and look at how it's set up and how it's written and what's actually going on in the book, I'm like, okay, yeah, I can see where they're coming from, but I honestly never had an idea that I was writing a zombie novel when I wrote Snow. And really, I still wouldn't classify it as such, but I've come to terms with some other people saying that, and that's fine. But like I said, with the Narrows was actually, there's a curious kind of history behind that book where I was writing, Snow was published through Dorchester Leisure Books. The editor there was Don Doria, a great guy, loved working with him. And, there's no reason to rehash what happened with Leisure, but we all know that story. But Don went over to Samhain, and he was starting up a horror line over there, and we were in talks about working on a new project. And at that time, I kind of took a step back and said, okay, well, we worked on Snow together, and I'm getting this feedback saying Snow is a zombie novel that's not really a zombie novel. And although it wasn't intentional, I kind of liked where that criticism was coming from. So I'm like, well, let me try to do that deliberately. So I, when I came up with the idea for the Narrows, it really was born of, from two different places. One place was, born from my desire to kind of tell a metaphorical story of the dying of small town America. And that's what really drove me to tell that story. And I've got this small town in Western Maryland that is really just on the cusp of collapse. And I introduced these creatures to that town that kind of, it's sort of like the final nail in the coffin. This is what happens when America dies. And that's really what I wanted to tell with that. The other angle is, the Narrows is really a rewrite of a manuscript I wrote when I was in high school. It was a manuscript called Dread's Hand, and it was a vampire novel. And when I went back and looked at that old vampire novel manuscript, it was just very dated, and vampires are just all over the place. And I did not want to address that, like everyone else seemed to be doing. But what I really liked was the atmosphere that surrounded vampire fiction. And I'm like, man, I'd love to write a vampire story without vampires in it. That's really what I wanted to do. And that's really what I did with the Narrows. And I thought about, two different things there. I thought about what kind of creature may, throughout history have given birth to a vampire legend, while simultaneously thinking, what would make these creatures really unique and worth telling? And, that's sort of, when you get to the end of the book, you kind of realize the symbiotic sort of nature of the creature that's at work in that town. And those are really, I mean, all those parts, once all those things kind of come together, you realize you got a story there,
Yeah.
So I got to tell my tale about the dying town, but I got to tell my tale about these interesting kind of creatures, and I got to use that vampire atmosphere without writing a vampire novel. And, I was sort of on the fence with really how the book came out, even when I sent it to Don over there. And it took me a little while after it was published to even really warm up to it. And I started looking at it. I'm like, this is some good prose in here. This is some good character story. This is, I like the character arcs. I like the, nothing is pat. Nothing seems to go where you think it can go. And it's really just, I'm happy with the metaphor of that book, which is, like I said, just a metaphor for the death of small town America. So, yeah, I mean, that's really the only book I deliberately set out to kind of take one of those old horror tropes and kind of turn it on its head and use it as my own.
And it's a fabulous book too. That one and Floating Staircase, they're still vying for my favorite two of yours. But it was done very well.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
When you're approaching theme and character arcs in your works, Kevin and I have been kind of talking about this, how we would ask this question, because I'm writing, as I said, I've been inspired to write a new story, and so far my character hasn't done anything wrong, and as I'm getting into the story, I'm having trouble figuring out what my theme is, because I'm not sure what he's exactly supposed to learn, what he's supposed to change from. And Kevin was like, well, you should really ask what he thinks about characters needing flaws in order to have conflict that relates to the character arc and the theme. What do you think about when you're making a character, their flaws, where that comes in, and do you think that they have to make mistakes early on in order to have a cohesive theme?
That's a good question. I'll say this, and I don't, this may not be as helpful as maybe you were hoping for, but a lot of this stuff I feel is more organic in nature than pre-planned. And, you know, I'm almost a theme illiterate. Like I go into a book saying, here's what this book is about. And here's how I go about telling it. I sort of come up with a story about characters and I say, here's the general story I want to tell. What type of characters would populate that story? And they seem to come automatically to mind. And when I plug them in and I start writing, it's just more of an organic process than a planned process. They kind of take on a life of their own. They kind of walk through the story and lead it where it needs to go. And for me, the themes of my books really don't take form until about halfway through. Then requires me to go back and change stuff that I'd written early on and really, really hone my focus. But I don't typically start off with a solid theme or with a flawed character who is going to overcome some great, thing. And you know what? The more I've written, the more I kind of lean a little towards that school of thinking. You know, I know early on it's like, you don't have a story unless your character undergoes some big, great change towards the end and redeems himself or whatever. And I don't know if I subscribe to that as much as I used to. I think sometimes a story is just as good as holding up a mirror and showing a reflection of things in society and things in real life. And sometimes those things don't have an explanation, or those things aren't redeemed, or there's no absolution. So, I understand the importance of narrowing that theme once I'm writing it and know where it's going, but I don't really set out to, with that in the back of my mind, to do it that way. Probably the only example of that's different than what I've said is that I just finished writing a manuscript now. It's the last thing I've written. I just turned in my agent like a couple of weeks ago. And the thing's a monster. It's 800 pages. It's 227,000 words. But the whole theme from the beginning of this book was sort of a reflection on obsession and addiction and how humanity is kind of weakened by our desire to have an addiction and to focus on addiction. And that was the only thing I could recall writing where I've actually had a theme from the beginning and started writing it. But other than that, like I said, it's more of an organic process. I've got this story, I want to tell it, and these characters just seem naturally fitted to this story, and whatever happens to them, you know?
So with that, and by the way, my brain just salivated thinking about 800-page book by you. That's
800 pages of long mouth.
See, that's something to look forward to.
Well, all right, I'm going to change my question because you said that Floating Staircase seemed too epic, and so you kind of narrowed it down. What was it with this one that seemed to make it work as far as being a horror novel, your style, and it being epic?
Well, I necessarily threw the word epic around.
Well,
myself,
yeah, maybe I put that in your mouth. Sorry.
I think with Floating Staircase, it became clear as I really started to edit the book and work on the manuscript that the parts that later became Cradle Lake, the themes just did not jive. They just weren't working together. They were conflicting. They were very confusing. Floating Staircase to me is very clearly a book about family and about siblings and about brotherhood and about honesty with yourself. I don't feel Cradle Lake is about that. I feel Cradle Lake is about, like I said, ownership, stewardship, what the understanding that that everything in life can't be perfect. You need some bad to balance out the good. And I don't feel all the themes kind of go together well. So that's why I split that book. It didn't have to do with page length or, too many subplots. They were just conflicting themes. With this book, everything just, I wound up taking a cast of characters, which I hadn't intended to do in the beginning of the book. But as I started writing it, I realized, man, I've got about 7, 8 main characters who are completely unrelated from each other at the beginning of the book, who all need to kind of tell their story. And that's kind of where I started. So you've got 7 or 8 main alternating characters and all their chapters kind of, and as the book proceeds, their stories kind of tie into one another. But it just the story I was telling, the story itself kind of lent itself to that kind of length. It's written in the third person, like I said, focuses on a variety of characters, and it was important to kind of show the widespread effect of the obsession theme throughout this city that I wrote the book in, throughout all those characters. Now conversely, I got a book coming out next year. It's the last book I've got under my Madonna contract right now, called December Park. This is, it's a coming of age thriller. It's about, five kids growing up in the '90s. It's probably my most intimate, autobiographical thing that I've written to date. It's basically about me and my friends growing up with the subplot of, these kids kind of find a clue that leads them to hunt down this serial killer of children that lives that's been killing kids in their neighborhood over a year long period. And that book it's about the same length. It's about 800 pages. It's a long book, but that book is told from the first person point of view of one of the main characters. And it's a very much more intimate telling. I tend to think of books in two different arenas. You've got books that are kind of an outward book where they focus on a lot of things going on at once. And, Snow, I see as an outward book. The Narrows, I see as an outward book. These are multiple characters all getting involved in the same situation. Then I've got books that I feel are more inward books, more intimate books. Floating Staircase is a more intimate book. One of my older novels, Passenger, that's a very intimate book. It's not necessarily the story you're telling or the desire to set out and write it, and, as you said, like an epic novel. It's just whatever the story lends itself to be, I just kind of let it go. And I'm not too concerned about page count. And these are, these page numbers I'm giving you are before my editor has gone through it and chopped stuff up. But, it's just whatever the story dictates and needs, I kind of let it go at that. I don't know if I'd characterize any of them as necessarily epic. Hey, we'll wait and see what happens when they come out, I guess.
Our sponsor for today's episode is Whispers from the Abyss. On the subway, during lunch, or even under the fluorescent glow of your cubicle, there is no escape. Now your slow descent into madness can follow you through the day as well as the night. The Whispers from the Abyss anthology is the first ever H.P. Lovecraft-inspired collection created specifically for readers on the go. All 33 spine-chilling tales are concentrated bites of terror, which include works by Greg Stalzi, Nick Mamatas, Tim Pratt, Dennis Detwiller, Greg Van Eekhout, A.C. Wise, David Tollerman, Sylvia Marino-Garcia, John R. Foltz, and Chad Pfeiffer. We are sorry to find out the loss of Nicholas Almond, one of the writers in this anthology. He recently passed away due to complications from cancer. From now until November 1st, 01 Publishing will donate all proceeds from the sales of Whispers to the family. Whispers from the Abyss is now available exclusively through Kindle. You can go to 01publishing.com for more information.
Did you have any characters in the beginning that, I guess kind of going back to my earlier question about faults and flaws, did you feel like you had to show them making a mistake early on in order to get rolling with the theme that you were trying to write?
Yes, I've had characters that have done that, but again, I think they're born more organically through the storytelling process than an actual deliberate, I'm going to sit down and I have to give this character a flaw in order to make them redeem themselves later on. That wasn't a conscious thought. Floating Staircase, we've got a main character who is basically just saddled his entire existence with the guilt that he's over his younger brother's death. And that encompasses his entire existence. That was just a story I wanted to tell as opposed to finding a character that plugged into a ghost story, So I started with the character and thought, here's a guy who, what does it take to be a person who feels ultimately responsible for the death of a younger brother? And what does that person do years from now? And the ghost story and everything that came that surrounds that plot came after that. So I started thinking more with the character than the story in that example.
Mm-hmm.
Again with Cradle Lake, it's a similar kind of examination. We've got a protagonist who is him and his wife, they've there are two miscarriages. His wife is clinically depressed to the point where she probably should get psychiatric, treatment. She's attempted suicide a couple times, and instead of addressing those issues for what they are, we've got a character who is now faced with the prospect of, can I shortcut over them, which is what the magic of that lake allows him to do. Can I shortcut over that and fix these things, even though I'm told not to, and that there are really no shortcuts in life, So again, it starts off, what interests me most is the character, the problems that they're faced with, and the story itself sort of builds itself around the character's problem. I don't know if that answers your question necessarily, yeah. But it's just, I think the characters and their problems come first. And if you've got really good characters and really, really good, problems with those characters from the get-go, the stories kind of build themselves around them, I think. And that's how it works for me.
Yeah, that's helpful. I appreciate that. Kevin, if you have something to say about that, or if you would like to, I know we just kind of mentioned Passenger, if you want to ask that question.
That's a good segue. As young writers, I think we're very, interested in those questions. Do you do this with the character? Do you do that? How do you? But I think probably the longer we write, the more we find that a lot of the best stuff just comes from, our gut and our heart. And we don't necessarily, and every writer is different, but I know for me that the better stuff that I've written is when I've gotten away from worrying about a theme or things like that. But one thing that I think distinguishes your work, Ron, is that there's an undercurrent of emotion, really honest emotion in all of your work, especially in Passenger, especially the ending of Passenger has got to be one of the most wrenching conclusions I've ever read. I remember closing that book and just kind of staring off in space going like, wow, and when I got to that point. I know for me, sometimes I have shifted over the last couple of years from thinking about, what's the theme of my story here, to really thinking, what is my character want? What are my character's needs? What are my character? And again, I can't, I know we've already talked about how this has been a very, organic process and things like that. But I just know from a reading perspective, that's what distinguishes your work from a lot of, even in Snow, the main character, if I remember correctly, was estranged from his wife. So here he is trying to get home to her, get back to her, but he's lost. And, in this isolated town. So that was what makes your work stand out, I think, is this really vibrant emotional core. I'm not sure if that's a question or a statement, quite honestly.
No, I think you're pretty perceptive. I think if I'm going to sit down, look, I put a lot of time in this stuff, and I take it very seriously. If I'm going to sit down and I'm going to take time away from my wife and my family and my kid and write this stuff, it's got to mean something. And I've never been the kind of author to just say, I'm going to write about, werewolves that turned into vampires, that turned into zombies, that beat a whole bunch of people, and they fight like on this big, mountaintop at the end of the book. That's never been my thing. I'm not a story writer. I'm not a traditional, I guess what some people would say, not a traditional horror writer. And I've taken a lot of flack for that. I mean, a lot of people have read my stuff because it's marketed as horror, but they're disappointed and they're saying, hey, Floating Staircase. I mean, Floating Staircase is a perfect example of that. People have said this is not a horror novel. This is not what I signed on for. And I get that where we come from with that. But, when I address this stuff and when I do it, I kind of, I've got no passion in me to sit down and write it unless I feel that something, some heart to it, some strength that can be relatable to the people reading it. And I look at, those things all come back to the same basic human elements over and over again. It's your what you love, who you care for, your children, your family, your own personal salvation and redemption. Those are the themes that, break down all my books and everything I've written. It's really those same few things kind of over and over again, just told from a different perspective. I find no interest personally in sitting down and writing something that doesn't address one of those core human emotions, because, at the end of the day, why bother? I mean, why am I going to spend 3 months of my life writing something that doesn't have some greater effect beyond the page? So that's what I attempt to do. And that's the stuff that interests me in as both a writer and a reader. And, you know, some readers read that and agree with me and follow along with it and like what I do. Others read it and say, no, wanted a bloodbath here. You know, we give us a floating staircase. We want a really good ghost story. We want people to die and houses to blow up. And, you know, I don't know. That's just not my thing. That's not what interests me, you know. So that's kind of where I'm coming from when I really look at these books and figure out what I want to write.
Thanks again to our sponsor, 01 Publishing. Their Whispers from the Abyss anthology is now available on Kindle. Don't forget to stop by in the next day or so for the second part of Ronald Malfi and Kevin Lucia's interview. And don't forget to stop by the website to enter into the major Coffin Hop giveaway.
Visit Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing for show notes, links, reviews, special guests, videos, and more. Email us at adventuresinscifipublishing@gmail.com. Sound effects from the Free Sounds Project. Music by Asymmetry, found at musically.com. No authors were seriously damaged in the making of this podcast.